This week, we take a look at the widow's son, the enigmatic mythology behind him. According to Rosicrucian and Gnostic teachings, who truly is the first widow's son? The answer may be shocking. Then, we're all aware of the various Masonic tools and how they apply in our lives, whether we put them to use or not. In this episode, we're going to feature an article by Brother Eric, who tells us how we can get or squeeze a little more juice out of that 24-inch gauge. Fair warning, it involves a little bit of sacrifice, but is well worth it. All this and more. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back to the show. This is episode number 612. I want to thank the contributors, the fellows, producers, and legacy partners of the WCY podcast. Since July of 2011, we've been doing this show, and it's all thanks to you. I am filled with gratitude at being able to do this Masonic education for anyone interested in the topic each week. If you're interested in assisting the WCY podcast in producing quality Masonic and trusted Masonic education, head on over to WCYpodcast.com. Click on Support the Show and check out your various options. We've got both Patreon and PayPal monthly models, $2 a month, $5, $10, or even the Legacy Partner level. And if none of that sounds great, perhaps a one-time gift, even just a couple dollars, helps out immensely. And it all goes back into the production of this program. Thanks again for considering. Well, I'm back in town from the Grand Lodge of Illinois Annual Communications, or Grand Lodge Sessions. Now, I wasn't presenting or anything, but I was down there, as I always am, to cover the legislation, to listen to all of the great presentations, and of course, see the elections and installation of the new Grand Lodge officers. We had a great time. I got to meet several brothers that had listened to the show, which was always really cool to be able to meet you and hang out. Even for only a few minutes, I know we were all busy and being pulled in several different directions. And so if you took the time to stop by, I want to say thanks so much. It does mean quite a bit. Now let's get right into the education for this week. The first one I want to read for you is called Behind the Widow's Son, a deeper dive into the enigmatic mythology. And it's by Brother Jonathan Densmore, who is an entered apprentice at the time of writing this, which was August 6th, 2019. Now, those of you who know, I have done a little bit of historical and symbolic research on the idea of the widow's son, and it is definitely a super interesting, and as the title identifies it, enigmatic, because it certainly is. Let's get into it. What is the symbolism of the widow's son? I recently covered the topic of the widow's son in Freemasonry and several avenues of interpretation and investigation about this concept, ranging from biblical genealogy to archetypal mythology. Now, I would like to take you along for a deeper dive into the topic of the widow's son and the possible source of it in Rosicrucian, Gnostic, and generally esoteric thought. Here again, there is a range of realistic versus mythological interpretations, but the occult significance of either or both will be further explored. At the heart and origin of the widow's son concept, according to the Rosicrucian writings of Max Heindel, is an alternative take on the biblical story of Adam, Eve, Cain, and Abel, which is itself embedded in an alternative cosmology related to, but quite different from, the biblical story of creation. In this Rosicrucian take on biblical cosmology, briefly, the spirits or angels of various elements represent different spiritual forces and archetypes, unfolding in the early events of creation, and the angels of fire play a major role. In this story, the angels are spirits of various elements, and the spirits of fire are those who decided to manifest the latent potential in matter by ignition. In the form of the sun and other stars, this effulgent quality provided a polar contrast with the cold vacuum of space and inert matter. By burning, they created an engine of manifestation as the heat evaporated the water, which recondensed to fall and cool the surface of the planets, eventually creating a habitable crust zone for biological life. Therefore, the spirits of fire, and all who are affiliated with them are aligned with the archetype of dynamic power manifestation in light, and are also somewhat rebellious in nature, hence breaking energy free from the bonds of matter, literally what fire does. The spirits of water, on the other hand, have exactly the opposite essence and agenda, chiefly to quench the flame of the spirits of fire and to keep energy bound in matter. Thus, the evaporated water condenses and rains down onto the hot molten earth, cooling it and stabilizing it back into a more structured, albeit less free existence. Thus, the world as we know it, and in fact, every individual, is some combination of these two fundamental forces, fire and water, dynamism and restraint, power and passivity, entwined together, encased within one another, playing out their polaric dance upon the stage provided by earth and air, solidity and space. What does the dynamic of the elements have to do with the widow's son and the biblical first family? Chapter 2 of this Gnostic creation story presents us with the more familiar characters of Adam, Eve, Cain, and Abel, with one less familiar guest appearance, an angel by the name of Samael. In this version of the story, Samael is said to be of the hierarchy of the angels of fire, and is identical with the serpent who convinced Eve to eat of the tree of knowledge. Thus, true to fiery archetypal form, he paved the way for the freeing of the latent potential of the human mind from the blissfully ignorant liquid passivity of the garden existence. In this version of the story, though, Samael did a bit more than just some slick apple salesmanship. He also provided Eve with her first child, Cain. However, before Cain was born, Jehovah forced Samael to flee elsewhere for his crime of corrupting Eve. By the way, Adam hadn't been created yet in this version. He was only created after Samael's banishment. This means that Cain is not only a fire angel human hybrid, but also the son of a widow. Although he got a stepfather and a half-brother in the form of Adam and Abel, respectively. As a child of a fire angel, it's safe to say that Cain probably didn't have much in common with them. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree, as they say, and while Cain is best known for his murder of his perhaps half-brother Abel, water child of Adam, he was also the first who labored to till the soil, indicating his identity as the original innovator of agriculture, the basis of all civilization, while his water brother Abel went with the flow and lived a leisurely life of animal husbandry. Furthermore, after his rejection by Jehovah, ostensibly for being a bit too clever and independent for the jealous God's tastes, and the resulting fratricidal episode, of course, Cain went on to found his own civilization, and his descendants are also identified as the inventors of metalworking, writing, and music, essentially the beginnings of all intellectual and technological endeavors. You could say they had, as it were, fire in their blood, and they used that fire to forge the foundations of civilization. Meanwhile, Cain's younger brother Seth and his preceding generations, like their late brother Abel, were of solely human birth, and therefore had a much more watery disposition, being mostly obedient and, though attuned to spirit and intuition, not all that bright, hardworking, or innovative. According to the myth, these two kinds of people continue to exist from ancient history to the modern day. The idea is that people are usually of one or the other disposition, either fiery, rebellious, intellectual, and valuing works over faith, or watery, trusting, faithful, and obedient. The good flock, who don't stir up a fuss and rely on, hopefully, divine guidance, often from religious authority figures. In fact, you could also characterize these two types of people as goats and sheep. What has all this to do with masonry? As you probably know, the construction of Solomon's Temple is an important biblical myth in Masonic lore. What many may not have realized from their Bible studies is that Solomon's need to hire Hiram Abiff, the master craftsman, to build his temple wasn't simply a matter of delegation. Solomon was himself a descendant of Seth, and for all his wisdom and poetic acumen, wasn't particularly up to the task of designing and overseeing the construction of the Grand Temple. It required a fiery descendant of Cain to get the job done. And Hiram Abiff was not only a descendant of the original widow's son, but was also a widow's son himself. This makes him both a widow's son and a widow's great-great-great-great-great-grandson. This duality within humanity is said by some to continue even now, with the church representing the sons of Seth quenching the thirst of the weary with their holy water at the entryway to every church rituals of baptism and symbolism of the Good Shepherd and his obedient flock. Meanwhile, the sons of Cain build, advance intellectually and technologically, shun authority, tame the wilds, and illuminate the world with their fire. Perhaps these two sides of that goat and the sheep, the fire and the water, the intellect and intuition, are ultimately destined to meet, intertwine, and come to balance. Whatever the case, it's hard to deny that Freemasonry leans heavily on the fiery side of this equation, as evidenced by all of the symbolism around being craftsmen, builders, intellectuals valuing labor for the betterment of man, personal initiative, and of course the significance of Hiram Abiff, the widow's son and master builder from the fire-tinged bloodline of Cain himself. What does it all mean? As with any mythology, one can take it in a variety of ways. Perhaps there is some literal truth to it. Different populations of people from the ancient past, born of different dispositions, with threads of this dichotomy continuing even today. We could also, however, take it as a symbolic of our own inner polarities, with our inner intuitive Solomon, wise and watery son of Seth, needing the intellect and determination of our inner son, if fire, Hiram, to complete the great work of the temple within us, and vice versa. It's always possible to form our own theories, but the only way to find out for sure what it means to a Mason is to ask one. There you have this piece on The Widow's Son, a deeper dive into the enigmatic mythology. I rather enjoyed the look at the particular mythos that was displayed here. Certainly, there are a number of wonderful mythological stories revolving around these types of characters, many of which were proliferated by some of the early 19th and 20th century philosophical and theosophical thinkers, people like Rudolf Steiner, Madame Blavatsky, the list goes on. To be sure, perhaps one of the most well-known of these stories involves Hiram Abiff traveling to the underworld. This is indeed a story by Gerard de Nerval, and if you have questions about this particular story, I would refer you to a past episode of the Whence Came You podcast, but also a great presentation by Brother P.D. Newman, in which he goes into this with much more detail. But in short, that story is completely fabricated and in no way, shape, or form has ever been any kind of official Masonic version of the events. Let me know what you think in the Craftsman Plus Facebook group. Next up, I've got a guest piece from the Midnight Freemasons by Brother Eric M. Gehern, or perhaps it's Gehern. Brother, I apologize, which is correct. However, I read this piece and I felt it to be something we definitely should read on the show, and for obvious reasons. So let's get into it right now. Extending the 24-inch Gauge by Midnight Freemason guest contributor, Brother Eric M. Gehern. As I write this, it has been approximately 24 hours since I sat in the East for the very first time. Yesterday, I had the honor of conferring the Entered Apprentice degree on two new brothers of our lodge. This was our lodge's first Entered Apprentice degree since June of 2021, and the first degree ever in our new building. My usual vocation is in restaurant consulting and sales, and I work 6 days a week consistently. Saturday is my only day off, which is why I scheduled the degree for that day. It led to a better attendance, and as many of our brothers are older, they don't want to be getting home super late on Monday night, which is our usual meeting day. As junior warden, it was also my responsibility to provide the meal for the degree. Since this was a summoned communication on a Saturday afternoon, I decided we would have a nice brunch prior to the degree. The menu consisted of a few different egg dishes, scones, a few different baked French toast dishes, sausage gravy, and biscuits, potatoes and yogurt, and fruit parfaits. Of course, when I decided on the menu, I was not considering my wife would be away and unable to assist in getting everything together. But luckily, my 16-year-old son was able to help me out the morning of. With his assistance, I was able to pull everything together in time, get to the lodge, and set up before the majority of people came in hungry and finish my personal preparations to get ready for the degree itself. The meal was very well received, and I received many compliments from the brethren in attendance. A normal stated meeting of our lodge sees attendance between 8 to 12 brothers on average. I was thrilled to see about 25 brothers attended the degree, many from neighboring lodges. This was the first time in our new lodge room that all the chairs had bodies in them, even in the north, and it was fantastic to see. I think it's such an amazing thing when so many like-minded people come together in a common purpose, in this instance, the initiation of two worthy men into our fraternity. Overall, the day was fantastic and ranks as one of the single best events of my Masonic journey. Sure, there were a few hiccups, a missed line here or there, but nothing that could have potentially detracted from the experience of initiation for our two new brothers. And that is all that really mattered. One thing that really stood out to me was how many brothers approached me to say how they didn't know how I had time to get everything done with my busy work schedule. Not trying to be braggadocious, but I hear this so often, whether in regards to educational pieces I put together, creating our quarterly newsletter, or preparing our meeting meals, it really comes down to one simple thing. If something is truly important to you, it is easy to find the time. Johann Wolfgang von Goethe said, quote, "One always has time enough if one will apply it well." I have certainly found that to be true. Prior to becoming a Mason, I was working like a dog, 70-plus hours a week, lots of travel, not enough family time. Most of us have been in that rut before. Since then, I have really taken the lessons of our working tools to heart, especially that of the 24-inch gauge. Now, I am not saying I divide my time the way we are taught. Rather, it is understanding the concept of finding balance. After all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. While I was internalizing our lessons, I started to discover a lot about myself. While I have always been a voracious reader, I also watched a lot of television to quote-unquote wind down at nighttime. It's amazing how fast a few hours go by when binge-watching The Office or Vikings. I started to limit that time and use the remainder for things that I could feel satisfied after completed. Researching some topic of interest, spending more time with my wife and children, studying our ritual, or reaching out to a brother. I started putting limits on my work as well, closing the laptop and leaving the office, setting away from office messages on my email on days off, responding to text with, "I'll call you back tomorrow morning." What began to happen was essentially I found hours more every day I could put to better use. Sometimes I still wish there were more hours in a day, but by getting rid of some of the superfluous items in our lives and focusing on what is really important, we can all extend our 24-inch gauge just a little bit, spend more quality time with the people in our lives that matter, and participate in activities that feed our minds and our souls. Brother Eric, who is currently a junior warden at Goshen Masonic Lodge, number 365 in Goshen, New York, under the Grand Lodge of New York, raised to the sublime degree of a Master Mason in October of 2019, and since then has served as an assistant secretary, a mentor, and charitable committee member, and a chairman. You know, I love this, that somebody so new into our fraternity has taken up such a powerful role and has taken the teachings of Freemasonry to heart. So many times we hear like, oh man, this guy was just raised and now he's already in an officer chair. Well, sure, if somebody's just now raised and they throw him into a warden chair, that seems to be a bit much. But doing things like Brother Eric here, who has served as mentors, doing assistant secretarial work, charitable committees, He's really getting to know how the lodge and the administration of the craft works, allowing him an intense experience that will prepare him for the East and will prepare him for what will likely be a very active Masonic journey his whole life. So, Brother Eric, thank you so much for what you're doing for your lodge, for these thoughts. I really appreciate them, and I wholly identify with a lot of what you say. In particular, turning off the TV and getting back to work on other things that might need some of our attention, like wife and kids, cleaning up the house a little bit, reading, researching, all of those things. So that's it for this week. I want to thank everybody for coming with us on this journey. Again, I want to thank our supporters of the program, which are our contributors, fellows, producers, and legacy partners. If you would like to learn more about how you can assist the WCY podcast in producing quality Masonic education, which is trusted, then head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on Support the Show, and check out our various options. I'd also like to throw out a congratulations to all of our new Grand Lodge officers here in the state of Illinois and folks who have taken on new responsibilities on committees or on the Grand Line or whatever you're doing. Thanks so much. And it was, again, great to see so many brothers at the Grand Lodge sessions. Until next week, stay on the level for Whence Came You. I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.
WCY Media.
the Asia.